powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Hour number two of Tom, Jake, and Stacy. We're going to get back to football here in a second in the Super Bowl. What the Seahawks can take from either one of these teams. But a little bit of breaking news here. Just a couple of guys the Mariners have picked up. Wei-Yin Chen, free agent, signed to a minor league contract. Invite to spring training. He last pitched for the Baltimore Orioles. Played 8 seasons, posting a 6.59 ERA. Last year, 68 and a third innings pitched. The other signing they made is Yoshihisa Hirano, who last pitched for the Diamondbacks. 4.75 ERA last year. He'll be in the bullpen, presumably. 2.44 ERA in 2018. So we'll see what ends up happening with him in the bullpen. The bullpen is not really something that we've talked a ton about yet, so both of these guys could end up being part of that. We'll see what happens. All right, the 49ers, when they rebuilt their team after it disintegrated under Jim Harbaugh and Trent Baalke, they rebuilt their defense, and they built it more or less in the image of the Seahawks. Now, the Seahawks are trying to rebuild their defense. They're not rebuild it, but maybe tweak it enough where it can be championship level. What can they borrow from the 49ers should they win this game, or even if they don't?
Yeah, I looked at their restructuring in the offseason as something that Seattle can learn from. When we've talked about where Seattle stands with defense, ranking, 26th or lower in big categories like sacks, pressure percentage, quarterback hits, passing and rushing yards allowed per game, that's not where you normally see a Pete Carroll-led defense, and it's not where you normally see a defense with guys like Bobby Wagner, K.J. Wright, even Bradley McDougal more recently on it. It's not the defense that I think people were expecting when the season started, and then you get Jadeveon Clowney, and it's even more of a surprise. So those guys played well, and you have some pieces, especially if you can re-sign Clowney. But the big question that I had when we were having these conversations was, can they really do it in one offseason, right? It seems like something that would be really, really hard to do when you're a perennial contender. You don't have a number one, number two, number three overall pick. You don't have a top 10 pick. When you're in the playoffs, you're picking lower. You usually have stars, so you have less capital to spend in free agency. It's really hard to make that quick kind of turnaround. Not only that, but it felt like there were several pieces removed. They've got 5 guys hitting free agency from the defensive line alone. And a couple of those, Jaron Reed, Jadeveon Clowney, even throw Ziggy Ansah in there, were at least regular starters, or were supposed to be regular starters on this defensive line. Quentin Jefferson, another guy too, who is in that rotation quite a bit. So when you start looking at all the pieces they need, it feels like almost an insurmountable kind of obstacle for an offseason. But I think one thing they can draw inspiration from is how the 49ers were able to turn it around. And I don't know how you feel about the 49ers. You might hate them as a Seahawks fan, but you have to give them credit in this regard, because John Lynch went out and made some pretty key moves and took this defense, the 49ers defense, from being one of the worst in the league last year to being probably the best in the league this year. Those key moves were, number one, they traded for Dee Ford. Number two, they signed Quan Alexander, who very briefly had the most expensive linebacker contract in the league, outside linebacker. And then they signed they drafted Nick Bosa. And I think that it's hard to look at that and try to copy that formula exactly, because you don't have a number two overall pick. Seahawks aren't going to have a shot at a guy like Nick Bosa in this draft. What they do have is $60 million to spend in free agency, which is more than San Francisco had last year or this year. And that's a lot of wiggle room for a team. Normally, you don't have that much cap space if you're one of the better teams in the league. They also have draft picks that they haven't had in seasons past. They lost that second rounder in a trade for Dwayne Brown. They had to trade down into the 4th and 5th and 6th rounds to accrue as many picks as they had last year. So now you're going in with not just a first rounder, but you've got second rounders too. So you have some wiggle room and some draft capital and cap space to spend. And the 49ers, if anything, have shown that at least a big turnaround is possible.
The other thing of that is you look at the primary needs, and people want to point to the secondary. Well, in reality, you only got one position, maybe two at most, that you need to fill. You got your safety spots. You've got your left cornerback spot in Shaquille Griffin that you feel good about. Trey Flowers is the question for you. That's one. In linebackers, you ultimately feel pretty good about your linebacker position in the sense that you've got Bobby Wagner, K.J. Wright, and I'm assuming they're going to keep K.J. Wright on their roster and not cut him. And I wouldn't imagine that they'd want to continue to go 60, 70% base with Cody Barton, that you would, you know, transition to more of your nickel defense. So that leaves the front line of your defense. Your defensive line is the primary place that you need to upgrade and get better. And with that cap space, even when spending a good chunk of money on Jadeveon Clowney, if you're able to retain him, there is still an incredible market to be able to get that done. You know, there's rumors about a Von Miller trade potentially. You look at Robert Quinn. And I don't want guys at the top of the market necessarily that you're going to be strapped for guaranteed money and long-term deals. You're already getting one of those guys with Clowney. I wouldn't want to do that with Ngakoue or Shaquille Barrett or any of those guys, because I think some of those guys are going to get overpaid. But you look at Robert Quinn, Vic Beasley, Matt Judon is maybe a guy that might get overlooked from the Baltimore Ravens. Michael Brockers from the Rams, Jason Pierre-Paul, Shaq Lawson. Those are some guys there's a lot of good candidates there that are guys that, you know, like Vic Beasley, for example, he wasn't exactly the, you know, all-star that he projected out to be, but he's been traditionally getting 5 to 6 sacks every year, and he's you watch him on tape and he's twitchy, right? Those are guys that you would love to add in addition to Clowney, not just as a single addition, but maybe you get two guys like him.
So does all this hinge on Clowney, though? Because it seems like you need the one superstar in there. Clowney's your superstar. You surround him with other guys, maybe Pierre-Paul, Beasley, guys you're talking about there.
I don't think it necessarily hinges on him, but I think it takes a big step to get there because he's a player that you normally wouldn't have. When I talk about getting a shot at a guy like Nick Bosa, you normally wouldn't have a shot to draft a guy like Clowney, who went first overall. The thing is, it's kind of twofold, right? In order to get Clowney to re-sign, I would imagine outside of just a contract, which other teams would be willing to pay him, you've got to convince him that you can give him some help too. So it's kind of a way of saying, look, we have our eyes on, you know, guy X here in the draft and here in free agency, and we've just got to convince you we can get them. And I don't know.
I wonder how hard of a sell job that is. I mean, if he say he has a list of teams he's willing to go to because he said he wants to play for a contender, right? He looks at the Seahawks, he says, okay, if I'm going to play on this defense, we're a contender, but I need help. If I'm going to play on this defense, they've already got other pieces. All I have to do is go there.
Correct.
But they're not as good of a team top to bottom.
Right.
That's just going to be up to him to wail and stuff. And the money, obviously, too.
It will be. But I do think that you know, the scenario that Stacey brought up is something. If I'm Clowney, if I really want to go back to Seattle, I might wait a day or two in free agency to sign my contract, or a week, and let this whole thing play out and see ultimately what the Seahawks are going to do and how they proceed. You know, make them work a little bit and show me that they are going to supply me with guys that are going to help me remove some of those double teams off of me.
If they really want to sign him, though, wouldn't they be telling him that stuff now?
Absolutely. But it's a different thing between telling and actually getting it done, right? Because there's other teams that are going to be out there trying to go after these guys,
too. I see what you mean.
Like, they have to acquire these guys.
I got you. But in Stacey's scenario, you're also talking about guys that they might draft too, right?
Yeah, I'm saying the draft needs to be a part. Here's what I'm saying. I think people are reading it as copy the 49ers. No, I'm saying you need to draw inspiration from what was a very, very productive talent acquisition for them on defense. Because when we've had conversations about how far Seattle's defense is from being a championship caliber team, and we talk about the pieces they might need, it makes it sound like they need, you know, 10 guys out there and they need new starters.
Really, they may only need one.
Right. But if you get, you know, if you hit on every pick that you make, or you, you know, make two great acquisitions in free agency and they're healthy and they work out, the case for the 49ers is that they made three decisions in the offseason and those guys, for the most part, stayed healthy and contributed, that was enough to turn their defense around. And I think that re-examining their transformation made me feel a bit more confident that Seattle at least has a chance to make a one-season turnaround. Even without the same draft capital, they have way more cap space.
It might for you and me, like if we examined it. Do you guys think that Pete Carroll and John Schneider look at these two teams, the 49ers and the Chiefs, and say, all right, what are they doing that we need to be doing?
I think you absolutely have to. You always have to be... Look, you have a formula that you feel very good about.
Everybody borrows from everybody.
Everybody borrows, you're right. And you look at the 49ers, and they're looking at it going, yeah, they borrowed from us.
Right.
Right? So they feel pretty good about their formula and the way they're going about it, but they're also looking around and seeing, okay, what do we have to do to keep up with everybody else? Okay, the Chiefs have their unique approach. We don't really have to face them in division or even in our conference, but we do have to face the 49ers. What do they have and what do we need to do to be able to keep up with them? Moves and counter moves. And that's something that you always have to continue to do if you want to stay competitive and stay ahead of the curve.
This conversation would be so much different if the Seahawks had beat them twice in the regular season and the 49ers had still gone to the Super Bowl. Because if we beat them twice, we wouldn't really be asking ourselves, all right, how do we keep up with them?
Well, it's not how you keep up with them. It's how do you get – if we've been having the conversation that Pete Carroll's philosophy works best when he has a better defense, your defense, statistically – you have some stars, but statistically was not at a place where you need it to be for your philosophy to be at its best. So how do you get there? Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Yeah, but not to a person like me.
Okay.
I'm not smart enough.
It
probably does to everybody else.
No, I
just can't keep up with it.
I can't. Sorry.
Know your strengths, know your weaknesses, Tom. Kudos to you.
By the way, in case you don't get to listen to our entire show, you can listen to it via the 710 Sports app powered by Dubin Law Group. All the podcasts are available on demand at 710sports.com, or you can download the 710 Sports app, once again, powered by Dubin Law Group. Right now, we're in four down territory.
This is four down territory
with Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
You live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it.
I'm going to try and guess the answer to this one.
Okay.
What trait does Patrick Mahomes possess that resembles Russell Wilson?
Okay. I want your guess.
It could be one of two things. I'm going to say he can create is one and escapability would be the other.
Okay. That's what everybody would probably think that the direction of which I was going in that aspect.
It's
neither one of those.
Wow.
It's neither one of those. The reason why Patrick Mahomes possesses similar traits to Russell Wilson that should make the 49ers fearful in my mind is his ability to bring his team back.
Oh.
You look at Russell Wilson, and he does a phenomenal job of being able to, in second half, fourth quarter comebacks, and being able to will his team to victory. That is a trait that is extremely hard to come by. It doesn't grow on trees. Not every elite quarterback has that ability. And Patrick Mahomes and Russell Wilson have that trait. They can, by their physical attributes, and one of those, both of those are part of it, but their mental makeup, their ability to stay within games and stay focused and not let the moment get too big for them, they thrive in those moments. And so if I'm the 49ers and we're talking about this scenario, Tom, like we did at the top of the show and say, hey, the 49ers are up 14 points or they're up 17 points in any given game, I'm not comfortable if I'm Kyle Shanahan or those San Francisco 49ers because they have the Kansas City Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes has proven that they can come back from any type of deficit, and it's because of Patrick Mahomes' special ability and traits.
Well, Kyle Shanahan he's already learned that lesson once in the Super Bowl, right, when he blew that lead.
Yes.
So he knows that better than anybody. Second down. Stacey, you're writing this article about the 49ers researching their defense. What's something interesting you learned about Robert Saleh?
So I didn't end up keeping it in the article because it was mostly background research. I was initially going to look at the construction of the two defensive lines, and then I went toward kind of focusing on how they turned it around in the offseason. But I do think an interesting takeaway was just the path that Robert Saleh took to the NFL. I think we've been talking a lot about Andy Reid, his history with the NFL. It's very storied, so it's easy to know everything about his background and the history and what's led him here. Robert Saleh is a younger guy, feels like a newer guy on the scene, but it's an interesting storyline because he was with Seattle. So I went back and I looked, And it's really fascinating and kind of momentous, some of the events in his life. So he initially was in finance, and his brother was in the South Tower during 9/11.
Ooh.
His brother made it out, but obviously was in a very close call situation, a very traumatizing situation. And I think realizing how close his brother was to potentially, you know, perishing and losing his life and having this family just so torn apart by it, he realized that he wanted to go back to football. And he loved football, and he didn't want this job anymore, and it wouldn't have made him happy. So it kind of made him reexamine his path in life. So he ended up going to, after coaching at a college level, went to coach with the Houston Texans under then DC Richard Smith. So when Kubiak came in, he replaced that defensive staff. And then Pete Carroll at the 2011 Senior Bowl, Pete Carroll and Gus Bradley are there, and they're talking to Richard Smith, who obviously used to be the DC there. And they're saying, hey, do you know a quality control coach that you can recommend to us? And he immediately recommended Robert Saleh. And the rest is history. It's a really, really fascinating article by Robert Klemko on Sports Illustrated. It's called Robert Saleh, The Road from 9/11 to the 49ers. If you're someone who likes some background reading before the Super Bowl and kind of those personal stories, I just think that when you get to this level, you start looking at the paths that these guys have taken, including coaches. And sometimes it's got some really fascinating and important life lessons in there, too.
That is fascinating. It's profound. I mean, we talked before about life-changing incidents, you know?
Yeah.
Wow. Third down. Jake, can a Super Bowl win help seal the deal for Chiefs offensive coordinator Eric Bieniemy, who's looking to land a head coaching position in 2021?
Yeah, you go through these...
Or 2020.
2020 already came and passed.
Right.
And he was passed up. I mean, he was a guy that you look at Andy Reid and has been able to produce offensive coordinators to head coaches like Doug Peterson and then Matt Nagy. And you looked at Eric Bieniemy, and he looked like a guy that was poised to be the next man up. And there was some controversy about the fact that he didn't land a head coaching position. And I think this is another part of that conversation of why the Rooney Rule has been re-brought back up and is being re-looked at and evaluated, because Bieniemy checks off a lot of the boxes. And if he can go out there in the Super Bowl with Andy Reid as a play caller and help win a Super Bowl, I think that he's going to put a lot of pressure on owners. Basically, it's going to be like, if you're passing me up in 2021, there is a serious systematic problem here, because there are going to be very few people that have the resume that he has. And so I'm not saying it will guarantee him a job, but it will all but near seal it.
Fourth down. We talked about this a little while ago. Do you take issue with Shaquille Griffin, saying he wants to shadow opposing number one wide receivers next year?
No, I have zero issue with that. I love it. I love the fact that he is standing out there and saying, look, And challenging a little bit and saying, I've wanted this. I was asking for it during the season a little bit, and looking into next year as a corner, I'm willing to take on those challenges, and I believe I'm good enough to do that, and I want to do what's ever best for this team to win. And that's ultimately what I believe he is saying, that he wants to contribute, and he doesn't want a situation like Green Bay to happen again, third and nine, and he's not covering Davante Adams on that inside fade route. He should be the guy that's you know, either winning or losing that battle. And I believe that Shaquille's comments come from the very best of intentions. And that's something that you want. I think for Pete Carroll, you want your players to continue to believe in themselves and continue to keep pushing and keep striving forward.
Our playoff coverage is brought to you by Washington Farm Bureau Healthcare. You know, you think about that game in Green Bay, and it was Davante Adams. It was really just him. In that game, I think that scenario would have worked, putting Shaq Griffin just on him, have him tail him the whole game. If you're going up against a team that has, say, two, maybe three of those guys.
Going up against the Chiefs?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it would almost seem like a waste to put him on one guy. Then how do you account for everybody else?
Well, the other idea of it, though, Tom, is that, all right, so if you can eliminate one player, right? If you can eliminate one player from having a big game by putting your best corner on him, it doesn't mean that he doesn't catch a single ball, but
right,
you limit his big play production. Davante Adams is one. Let's go into a scenario of that actually happened to them last year, Tampa Bay. You've got two really good receivers in Mike Evans and the name's escaping me for the other receiver on the other side.
It wasn't Godwin, was it?
It was
Chris Godwin.
Chris Godwin.
Yes, it was Godwin. And so you have the two of those guys. All right, let's find which is the best matchup for Shaquille Griffin on which to, on which receiver. Let's eliminate him from that game, and now we can shift coverage. We can try and find better matchups against that one particular receiver. It gives you that flexibility. That's why elite lockdown corners are very, very valuable from that standpoint. And so for them, if Shaquille Griffin can do that, I don't see any reason why you would limit him just to continue to keep him on one side of the field just based off of the integrity of your cover three zone structure.
It would be strange, though, if Sherman never did it, if Shaq Griffin did.
Correct. It would be strange, and it would be out of the norm of this defense. But like we talked about, you have to reevaluate your philosophy, and they don't have to completely get away from what they do and accomplish this very thing. They don't need to do it the entire game, but in critical situations, absolutely. And if you can do it successfully, it does give you a tremendous advantage as a defense.
Russell Wilson and Sierra have a little announcement. We're going to talk about that next in the Halftime Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
It's time for the Halftime Show.
The half is not over. There's 3 seconds on the clock.
Revisiting the biggest stories of today at the midpoint of the show.
The Halftime Show, it's not easy.
Now, here's Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
We're going to talk about the three stories, or three of the stories that we've gotten to so far here. One of which was that I dared to compare the Super Bowl on Sunday to Super Bowl 48. How did I do that? I picked out six players that were involved in the Seahawks-Broncos Super Bowl and six players that are involved in this upcoming Super Bowl and compared them. I think the 49ers are going to own the Chiefs in this game. Not 35 points own, but I think they're going to win handily. Patrick Mahomes is going to be like Peyton Manning. He's going to be stopped. Demaryius Thomas is going to be like either Travis Kelce or Tyreek Hill. They'll be one of those two will be taken out of the game because and Joey Bosa will be the big one-man wrecking crew like Cham Chancellor was. Jimmy Garoppolo and Russell Wilson will be non-factors in this game. And then the MVP, much like Malcolm Smith, will be somebody from the 49ers that we've never even heard of.
See, I think Patrick Mahomes is the difference in this game, and I wouldn't compare him to Peyton Manning. It's fair to look across the board and say this is another Super Bowl where it's a great defense versus, you know, the best offense, and what's that going to be? Defense wins championships. Why wouldn't it be the same thing? But I just think Patrick Mahomes is in a different place in his career, a different place physically than Peyton Manning was in that Super Bowl.
And I have a hard time because I go back and forth. I really, really have been impressed with the San Francisco 49ers all year long. With their defense, their complimentary run game, Kyle Shanahan and his play calling and the unique style in which he does things. I mean, Jimmy Garoppolo barely throws the ball down the field, yet they're able to be effective. And it's because he does a great job using space and using motion and getting guys in the proper position. But then you look at on the other side, and Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid, they're just different. But I do have to lean towards Tom. I do think that ultimately defenses like the 49ers are the key in these types of games, and a running game to go with it has the ability to control the clock and control the game from the very beginning.
We'll see who's right on Monday, but something tells me the Chiefs are going to win and Patrick Mahomes is going to throw an octopus.
I would love that. I would love that. And add the octopus.
Now, wait a minute. You see, here's the thing that has me confused about the octopus.
I think it has to be the player receiving.
I think so, too. I don't think you can throw the octopus.
What?
No. No, I don't. Yeah, I don't think that the quarterback gets credit for the octopus.
He has to run it in.
Well, he'd have to run both in. He'd have to get a rushing touchdown and then run in a two-point conversion to
That's
get
not
the,
fair.
A true octopus.
All right, well, second story. We'll just go with that. That was the octopus. What is an octopus in football? That is when a single player scores a touchdown and then the team goes for a two-point conversion and that same player scores the two-point conversion.
You cannot tell me that anyone knew what that was before I don't know, maybe outside of betting in Vegas.
Well, this came up. The reason why we're talking about it is because it came up as a prop bet. I don't have the casino in front of me, but you can make a bet on this. And in fact, underneath the prop bet, it actually explains what the octopus
is. Yeah, because they need to.
Because nobody knows
no
what it is.
No one's going to know what that is.
It says an octopus is a player scoring 8 points in one drive. Player scores a touchdown and then gets the ensuing two-point conversion.
Can you imagine a stat line where it's like OCT 2?
I'm going to have to throw this around. I'm going to have to throw this around in normal conversation, see if it sticks.
By the way, if you bet $100 on this, you get $1,200.
Really?
Wait a minute. Guys.
Wow.
Guys.
If you bet yes.
Yeah. Do you just have to bet yes that it will happen, or do you have to bet on the player?
Not the player.
It's even easier.
Just will there be.
Yeah, but that's how you talk yourself into major debt, Stacey.
I know.
Well, I don't have to
name the player. It's just got to be
a
player.
Really?
Oh, in the bag.
Yeah, done.
Well, printing money.
That's right.
Someone's explaining it's an octopus because they have 8 arms. Yeah. No, I'm saying I've never heard someone use it like this before.
Do I have the money line right? So it says minus 3,000. Does that mean if you bet 100...
to win 3,000.
Even better.
No, that's not right.
No, the other. That would be plus 3,000. So that would mean you'd have to bet 3,000 to
get 100.
Win 100.
Right. So if you vote no, you have to bet 3,000 to win 100. You don't want to do that.
No.
The only reason to bet is to bet yes, it's going to happen. Bet $100
yes.
And you win $1,200.
And then I make all the money in the world.
You know who we should bring this up to figure out if this is like a legit thing and not just some random casino.
I think we should mention it to players.
We should mention it to Jim Moore. If Jim Moore has heard of an octopus before, then it is definitely a thing.
Well, but maybe this is the first time
it's a betting
thing. They've given the option to bet on this.
Maybe. Wait.
But you're right, Jim Moore would know.
Like, you really think in the odds makers are just laughing, like, you know what we should call this? No, just listen to me. Write down the octopus and see how many people give us their money.
Think about it, though. Patrick Mahomes, they're down by 18.
I totally think
they're
Andy
down.
Reed
they're
would
down
go for
16.
Yeah,
you know, they need two scores, 2 8-point scores.
I think it'll happen. I'm betting right now that a 2-point conversion attempt will happen.
I'm going to think about that next. Yesterday, at the end of our show, there was a report that Kraken was going to be the name of the new Seattle NHL team. And then later there was another report, actually it was a tweet from the NHL Seattle team saying that they had not settled on a name yet. But I put out a poll when I went home asking, how do you feel about the name Kraken for the Seattle NHL team? Do you love it? Do you think it's decent? Or do you hate it? 42% loved it. 26% said it's decent. 32% anything but Kraken.
Now, don't get too excited because there are a lot of worse names than Kraken. You could be, as Tom Sr. recommended, the Seattle Software.
That's a good name.
It's not.
It is not a good name.
The Seattle Software is better than Kraken.
No disrespect to Mr. Tom's dad, but no. Seattle Software sucks.
Oh,
jeez.
Wait a minute.
Disrespect.
Stacey, I said what I said.
Stacey, I thought you agreed with me an hour ago. You liked it.
She actually...
I thought about it.
Rational conclusion that no way.
You wanted the floppy disk and everything.
Well, only if we get floppy disk hats. Then I'm maybe okay with it, but I take it far less. I think far more people would be upset with the Seattle Software as your hockey team name.
That's only because
than the Kraken.
It's only because it's new.
But then the bill of the hat could be like a floppy disk.
Right.
Because you have to open your mind.
Yeah, man.
Oregon Trail or Math Blasters or something.
Seattle Software.
I want the mascot to be an apex predator, even if it's one that doesn't exist.
At least have a strong name. Like, Steelheads to me would be a cool one. I wish you told me, you broke my heart yesterday and said for legality reasons that they couldn't be the Metropolitan.
Well, that's what everyone's first choice would be.
I think that would be awesome.
Couldn't they just do the Mets?
The Mets?
No, I don't think.
Is that trademarked as well?
That's probably trademarked, I would imagine. Now, did you know someone here is on the text line? I hate to question people, but I'm going to question on this
one.
They said a kraken is a giant squid and not an octopus. Is that real?
I think it's based on a giant squid, but it's obviously not a real animal.
Aren't they the same thing?
Squid and octopus? No, Tom, you need to educate yourself before you try to come at me like that.
Seattle Software. That's the name.
So let it be written, so let it be done.
What's the difference between a squid and an octopus?
Well, every image, when you search Kraken, you see an octopus, not a squid.
Well, what's the difference?
Like, anthropomorphically?
There's lots of differences.
Like what?
All kinds. All kinds, Tom.
The shape of their head is different.
Both squid and octopus are aquatic animals.
The squid live deeper in the ocean?
No, they don't.
Yeah, they do.
Squid have tentacles.
So do octopus.
No. The squid also have two fins on their head, unlike an octopus.
Just like I said.
Whereas an octopus has no hard shell on its body, the squid has a stiff backbone-like structure called a pen.
Octopuses are smarter.
Oh, that's right. We used to write with squid pens. You'd have ink in it.
Big differences.
It sounds like the same thing to me.
No.
It sounds like the difference between me and Jake.
Regardless, a squid or octopus is a bad mascot name. That we can all agree on, right,
Seattle
Stacey?
Squid? I'd take that.
Someone texted in saying seismic force.
As a mascot? No.
It's like the Beastquake, I guess?
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know.
There's earthquakes that happen here.
Wait, there's one that I haven't really heard dangled out there. Is Pilots available?
Seattle Pilots?
Like the old team that was here for
a year?
The old
Mariners?
Bring them back.
Yeah, maybe. To honor that history, why can't we call them the Pilots?
I feel like it's not been one that's been thrown around. Because didn't the NHL initially trademark a couple different potential names?
I don't know if they did or didn't, but that's a good one.
According to SeattlePilots.com, for whatever this is worth, the Pilots' name, logo, and related insignia remain trademarked by Major League Baseball.
Oh, they own it?
They should give it back.
You know why? Because Bud Selig was the commissioner, and he took the Pilots to Milwaukee initially. That's why we should ask the owners of the Brewers to give
that
up.
We have it back?
Can't we just pay them?
You guys aren't even using it.
We've got all kinds of money, don't we, on this project?
I think so.
Yeah.
We should.
Kick the Brewers a couple of bucks. Be like, come on, give us the Pilots.
Come on, Brew Crew.
Well, we settled that.
Yeah, I guess we did. All right, coming up next, we've got the best possible way to make basketball better. This is going to be fun. Next on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
All right, now this is going to be one wacky idea. And I'm not going to even say where it comes from. I'm just going to ask this question first, all right, and just take a second to digest this. There's a lot of people out there who don't like particularly college basketball right now, just the way it's played, the level that it's played at. I'm not one of them. I love college basketball. Some people don't like the NBA. Some of you just don't like it because of what happened with the Sonics. I get that. But just bear with me on this. What if we had some radical rule changes? How about this? Dunks are worth 3 points.
I like it.
Threes that don't touch the rim, so swishes, are worth 4 points.
I really like it.
If you miss a free throw, you deduct 1 point.
Fully agree with that one.
Yeah.
I can get on board with this.
Isn't that the most frustrating thing in the world when your team is like down two and you miss a free throw? It's like, God, now we just lost a possession. Frustrating. Anyway. All field goals in the final 3 minutes of the game are worth 8 points. That's a bit much.
That is a little bit much.
No, it's not enough.
Now, where are these ideas coming from, Tom? Because I'm assuming that you didn't just make this up.
Yeah, I didn't make it up. But they actually play this brand of basketball in North Korea.
What?
We've been doing it backwards.
We have. They've had it right the whole time.
In North Korea, their actual professional league, these are the rules they abide by.
North Korea.
Wow.
Now, what I'm curious about, did something get lost in translation when Rodman went over there for the first time?
Now, that's a legit question.
Because he's buddies with that guy. Maybe they just misunderstood what he said.
Maybe. And maybe, you know, Dennis Rodman's like, you know what? I'm going to kind of change the rules here. I'm going to have some fun with this, and I'm going to tell them the wrong rules of basketball. Right. But the first three, I mean, that's kind of – I like that. That'd be a fun brand of basketball.
I like the idea of the 8 points.
You like
the
that
idea
one?
Of being down so far that you can make it back in the final, what, 3 minutes?
But you know what? If you make those worth 8 points, it kind of negates everything else.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's the one part that I really don't like. But the one rule that I really like is the minus one for a missed free throw. That would be awesome. Yeah. And that would bring a whole different level to the Hack-a-Shack strategy, right? If you can't make free throws at the end of the game, you're not playing.
Shaq probably wouldn't even start.
No.
Case.
No, he would play. He would play for the first three quarters of the game.
And that'd be it, right?
Yes, he'd be gone.
You think there's issues determining the swish rule?
You know, like how close to the rim. Like, man. Well, I bet they have, you know how they have like pylon cameras?
A sensor.
I bet they have rim cam. And it's how close did the ball get? You have to make sure, you know, hey, let's go to instant replay. Slow motion.
I mean, jokes aside, the NFL barely got pylon cam like a year ago. If the folks in North Korea were already using rim cam for the last 5 years, then Roger Goodell's got some explaining.
Can you imagine the controversy if it was something where everyone was debating? Like, that ball definitely touched the rim. Stills all over Twitter.
Go to review, under further review.
Yeah. Under further review.
And the other question was that it was only 3 points that turned into four. I mean, why stop there? A perfect swish on a J? Make it a three.
Why not?
How about no fouls?
They
take away the free throw. Like,
wait, you mean no fouls at all?
That would
I'm sorry.
It would just turn into
hold on a second. No, let me back up. We've got foul. Well, yeah, we've got fouls, but we take away things like charges and blocks. You're allowed to do that.
That would just bring people steamrolling through people.
Good. That's the way it should be.
More contact.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if any NBA player would get on top of that.
Back in my day, that's the way it was.
Yeah. Is that what it was?
Prison ball. Prison rules.
I'm pretty sure they still called a foul. They just did it anyways.
Right. Second story here. This one's weird. What kind of people have this kind of time on their hands? An Astros fan charted every trash can bang in the 2017 season. So remember, the Astros have been accused of the banging trash
cans.
Banging
on a trash can, drumming on a street light, doing the whole thing.
Buzzers. Right. It doesn't count for a buzzer, though.
Right. They didn't chart that.
Well, how are you positive it's a trash can bang? That you're hearing?
Don't you know the sound of a trash can bang when you hear it?
I guess that's true. It's unmistakable.
Unmistakable?
Unmistakable.
1,100 bangs over 8,200 pitches. So roughly 1 in 8?
Yeah. I guess. Yeah,
now check
somewhere
this,
around there.
Check this one out just as an example. This is from the Wall Street Journal. An Astros fan heard the infamous trash can bangs 54 times in one game against the Blue Jays' Toronto right-handed pitcher Mike Bolsinger, who allowed 4 runs in just a third of an inning that day, never pitched in the majors again. His career after that day, the Astros cheated him out of that start, his career, finito.
You know what I will say? I think that there's a population of Astros fans and maybe even Astros players that haven't outright said it that probably really think, well, I mean, we still had to play defense and we still had to do all this stuff. It's not like we really cheated. And I don't care if you think this guy was bad before that start.
He was.
You had a lasting effect on a lot of different guys.
I agree with that, Stacey. I mean, I should point that out. This guy, Bolsinger, he was never a good pitcher. I mean, if you look at his ERA, he pitched 4 years, 550, 362, 683, 631. He was brutal.
But he's not the only guy who had a bad game against you. And guys carry that into, you know, their career.
Well, is that the trash can?
That's the trash
can.
That's the trash can.
Couldn't you tell right away?
That sounded like a plastic trash bin that you put.
Yeah, more like a waste basket.
Right, that you put the leaves in.
Dum, dum, dum.
It's more of a thud than a crack. Right.
Yeah, you see? Unmistakable. Tom immediately knows exactly what that is. That is, to me, when you look at that individual story for that pitcher, I mean, you talk about the impact, the lasting impact, wins and losses, but you're also ruining guys' careers. You're ruining their their performances out on the field and how their career trajectory goes. I mean, this is one guy, obviously, that ends his career. But, I mean, this did have a pretty big impact in terms of the
putting
the,
food on this guy's table.
Here's my question, though. It's an Astros fan that's charting this?
Yeah.
I think if someone's going to watch every single game of that season and listen for the trash can bangs, you need a non-Astros fan to do it.
Very true.
We need to get the
also,
what do you think? You think he's lightening the load?
I don't know.
His motivation would be to kind of skirt some stuff under the rug.
Right.
Yeah, he came out here and said there's 1,100.
Yeah, I think that's probably what it was. I'm actually going to get down to the bottom of this.
No, you're not.
And show that this is an absolute farce. And he ended up finding out that it was actually a pretty prevalent thing.
Oh, so you think that he came around, that he had a moment of kind of self-reflection during this time he spent rewatching the 2017 season, and he thought, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Chad, whatever my name is, I need to really think about this team right now.
Right, which then only leads me to the same conclusion of which when you hear the Astros players talk about this whole incident and the lack of empathy, the lack of accountability that they have on this particular issue and that they just want to brush it aside and that's no big deal, it bothers me to no end that no punishment is going to come down on any of those players in that clubhouse.
I hope this guy doesn't have kids. He should be spending his time with his children.
Can you imagine? Dad, we want to hang out. He's not now. Not now.
Busy incriminating our team.
I'm in the middle of July.
Can't you see I'm busy?
How can the Super Bowl change our lives? Apparently it has, at least for Mike Salk. We're going to talk to him next, 710 ESPN Seattle.